Spieltrieb, der Kinder- und Jugendfußball-Podcast von Advance Football.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Spieltrieb Episode Nummer 16. Es gab jetzt eine längere, ungewohnte Pause, die hing natürlich mit der Corona-Zeit zusammen. Wir haben aber die Zeit genutzt, um ein neues Format zu starten, und zwar nennt sich das Advance Football Talk. Dort haben wir auf YouTube ein- bis zweimal die Woche einen Livestream, in dem wir auch wieder Gäste einladen. Oftmals sind es Leute, die wir auch schon hier im Podcast haben, aber auch teilweise neue Gäste aus dem Kinder- und Jugendfußball. So wie jetzt auch diese Episode mit Thor Lakur Arnason. Thor ist ein Isländer, den haben der Sakko und ich in dem Sudan kennengelernt und waren mit ihm zusammen für ein Projekt dort. Mittlerweile ist Thor technischer Direktor des hongkongischen Fußballverbands und versucht dort den Fußball weiter voranzubringen. Ich habe mich eine Stunde lang mit ihm auf Englisch unterhalten im Livestream. Dementsprechend ist die Tonqualität nicht ganz so gut wie sonst bei unseren Podcasts, aber inhaltlich wahnsinnig spannend, was er zu erzählen hat. Nicht nur von seiner Zeit, die er jetzt gerade in Hongkong ist, sondern auch von seiner Zeit in der Vergangenheit beim isländischen Fußballverband, wo er als Trainerausbilder und Nationalmannschaftstrainer gearbeitet hat. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit dieser Episode Spieltrieb.
Spieltrieb, Doppelpass.
Great to see you. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. The last time we saw each other, it was like in the middle of Africa, I guess.
Yes.
Being on an adventure, I would call it.
I'm not sure we can talk about that trip.
It's all right. It's highly confidential. Well, it's the first time we do an English version of the talk. Normally, we try to give our audience and our customers kind of a experience and opinions from different experts in youth football. Normally they're from Germany, of course, and German speaking. So you're the first one doing this in English, but we can talk auf Deutsch genauso ein bisschen.
I can understand Deutsch a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, but we'll do it in English. So sometimes a few words I don't remember them. You have to help me out then.
No.
I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, your English is fine. Yeah,
okay, cool. For a start, why do we brought you in here? So what do you think? So what is your task today?
My task today? Well, yeah. I'm pretty relaxed about it. I think the main thing is just to talk about youth football and I think it's good that we distinguish that youth football is not the same as senior football. And I think in general, what I would like to discuss is, because I've done a lot of national teams in the past, that even the association, UEFA and FIFA, in my opinion, they sometimes don't distinguish the difference between youth football and senior football. So you even have the same rules. You have three substitutions in the under 17s and in the national team. For me, it makes no sense. So in general, it shows the arrogance sometimes, and even it's just stupid that you approach these two things in the same manner: youth football and senior football. And I think also there are people and coaches who are really good in developing players and don't want to be in the result business as in the senior teams, and also vice versa. And even sometimes UEFA, FIFA and the association, they will look for people in senior football, the senior football experience, to talk about youth football, like they're specialists on youth football. And it irritates me extremely. So I think we have a lot to talk about.
All right, that's great. To give the people some context, could you describe your way to the Hong Kong Association for the last few years? What have you done? Where do you come from?
Yeah. So basically, I would consider me an outlier. If you think about a football player, the national team today, the best Icelandic team we've ever had, it's a mix of talented players who have always been good from the beginning, like Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's at Everton, and Aron Einar Gunnarsson, the captain, who went through AZ Alkmaar Academy and brought his way to Cardiff, played for a long time in Cardiff, but now he's in Qatar collecting money. We have a mix of these types who went early out to academies and players who were outliers. They would play in the third division in Iceland, second division in Iceland, struggled, were relegated, but made it to this team, the fantastic team that Icelandic football is known for, the team we've had for the last 6 or 7 years. So it's a mix of very talented players when they were young and players who were outliers who were not known when they were 17, 18, 19, 20. They weren't in our system, in our national team system. So same for me. I was a decent player, really good goal scorer in the second division, but got injured when I was 22 and decided to go into coaching. And it's a more difficult pathway as a coach if you didn't have a very successful career. If we take Steven Gerrard, everybody waited for him. He played at Liverpool and then they laid down the red carpet at Rangers and waited for him. And you get this emotional attachment to the fans. We who don't have this successful career, we need to, you know, fight our way like an outlier. So my pathway is similar as to some of the players who've done that. So basically, I decided I want to be a full-time coach. So that was very difficult like 30 years ago. But I managed to do it almost my whole career. So I was an academy manager for some clubs. And then around 20 years ago, I ended up working in coach education in the FA and was doing also academy manager or senior team coach and so on. So it was around 2004, around that time, that I've been a very young Premier League senior team coach, that I decided to be the best I could be in youth development. The reason being that I always brought 17, 18, 19 years old players and played them in the senior team. And I was very bold in that way. So even two or three players who have been starting a lot of games in the current national team got their first games with me when they were 17 or 18. And actually, we found out that although we have these two groups, outliers and the players who went early abroad in the Icelandic current team, all of them have that in common, that they started playing senior team football very early. So this was my path when I decided in 2004, okay, I'm just going to focus on youth development. And since then, I've mainly been working with that. I've done some senior team football, but mainly focusing on development.
Okay. So at the Iceland Football Association, you worked as a head coach of the association? Or what is it?
No, my role was, I've been national head coach for the under 50s on both of the boys and girls side, under 17, both boys and girls. And then I was the head of a talent ID project that we started in 2013. So I was lucky enough to be given the opportunity to set that up. So we started to scout players a little bit earlier, and I brought them in when they were like 13 years old. After that, I went to Sweden for 2 years to work in Brommapojkarna, who is the biggest club in Europe with 4,000 players. It's in Stockholm. I even managed to sell a player to Bayern Munich when Ole Hoeneß was the manager of the youth development, because he was sentenced to jail. So at that time, he couldn't work for the senior team. So I went to Munich to sell a player to him. It was absolutely unbelievable, because I had forgotten totally about that he was involved in this tax thing. So we were trying to get him to Sweden to come, but he always said, no, it's better you come. But he couldn't go. So. But he didn't tell us. So remember when we signed the deal, usually when you do something like that, you go out for dinner or whatever. But he said, no, guys, I can't come with you. I need to go in at 4 o'clock. So he was able to work there from 8 to 4. And then he went into jail, basically, for after that. So, Bromo Pokena was interesting, but it's a selling club. They have struggled with their senior team. But because they have so many players and a really good setup, they sell players very early on. So after that, 2 years there, I went back to Iceland, ended up in the FA soon after that. And then I was aiming for to go on abroad and ended up in Hong Kong 1.5 years ago.
Okay. I would really would love to come back to the Iceland Football Association and then Hong Kong as well. But let's be COVID-19 is everywhere. Well, let's just have a few sentences about it. How does it affect your work there in Hong Kong? Is there any affection, like, or is it like in Germany, for example? This week they started to give the clubs and the people more freedom to decide, okay, when to play or when to train. But it's restricted. But you are now able to do something. In the last 8 weeks, it wasn't.
It's difficult to explain. First of all, my first impression is I think everywhere in the world we're very helpless. I mean, we can talk about remote coaching, you know, coaching online and everything. And in that sense, the easiest way has been the fitness part. You can set up some things for the players through the fitness coaches and all that. We're just really helpless. It's like you can't fix this. You can't do anything. I mean, if these are the restrictions. I think the problem in Hong Kong was mainly in the beginning, nobody trusts China. So this happens, starts in China. So people thought the numbers were wrong. They thought it was going to be brought over to Hong Kong because the borders were open in the first few weeks. So it was a lot of panic, and it was not a good feeling to be here in the beginning. However, Asian people are used to viruses, more used to viruses than us in Europe. And they had the SARS flu in 2003. So with everything around it, it was soon I noticed that I was probably in the best place in the world to be in. And we only had 1,000 cases here. So, but because people are so careful here, they decided to close everything down. And we played the Premier League at our training center for like 6 weeks, but then we closed everything down. And I think that instead of starting it now in the summer when the season is over, we decided just to start, make a perfect start in the start of next season. So I think from August, we'll see everybody very active. It doesn't matter youth or Premier League or whatever. Just from August, we'll start from scratch. I think it was a sensible decision. So
right now everything is shut down.
Yeah, we are not. I think that because gyms have been closed, they just reopened gyms, so they're slowly opening that. Some swimming pools with restrictions. I think a training center is going to be open in like 1 or 2 weeks, and then we can bring in first the national teams and the Premier League, and then the youth teams probably not until July, August. And there's no need to risk it. I think the mindset of everybody is just, okay, the season is over, so to speak. So we'll try to start from scratch.
Total opposite in Germany with the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I think that in the two ways, I mean, we have these leagues who there's so much interest, TV interest, and they have a lot of money based on this. It's totally different philosophy from the smaller countries. So like Hong Kong, Iceland, the Faroes, these leagues are smaller, they might try to play. Like I know that in the Faroes, there's more interest in the league because they're going to start now, so they can live stream it because there's so much interest of football. Not only live football, but just watch it on television. Like in Middle East, there's not a lot of people going to matches, but they are crazy about football on television. So you cannot talk about the Bundesliga and the Icelandic Football League or the Hong Kong Football League at the same time. It's not the same.
You mentioned the video coaching and all things you changed right now. How did your communication towards your colleagues and your players changed right now? Is everything like Zoom or Microsoft Teams, or is there any other solution you found?
Company-wise, with the coaches and everything, it was home arrangement for quite some time. Of course, I went to the office, so you use Zoom or whatever, WhatsApp, and all these things are very easy with the staff and all that. We adapt very quickly. Going from a grown up to kids and teenagers is totally different. Also because it changes the sleeping cycle and everything in a kid. You know, it's so difficult to control this. So we are actually starting in like 2 weeks' time. We're going to do online coaching for the first time. We have a company that's going to sponsor all the clubs, youth clubs, to do that. So we're going to just to test it. You know, it could be some drills you can do, the coach is going to show, and then some message about tactic, the message about behavior and all that. I think we reacted pretty slow to that. And it's just, I think it's because of the situation in Hong Kong is when you have a flu like this or a virus like this, people just get very, very scared. And we had a lot of people who just don't want to go out, don't want to go to work. It's totally different from Europe and even America. People just have difficulties with keeping the discipline, basically. So I think that I think we acted a bit too slow with this thing, with the online thing, because you can do some things. But with the restrictions in the country, it's difficult even to go out to all the training grounds, all the public grounds are closed. So you can do some things in your living room or in the balcony or whatever. But then we need to consider that this is one of the most indented areas in the world. I mean, it's so crowded and the apartments are so small. So it puts you in a really bad position. You can go out jogging or whatever. So fitness-wise, it's not a problem, but you're not going to, you know, dribble the ball on the street here in Hong Kong. It's not possible.
Despite these problems, is there any best practice you discovered in the last few weeks in your network? Like with the challenges and maybe all the methods of communication, is there anything you think, oh, that's that was useful? I really would like to do this as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Zoom, the way we are doing now is going to be used more in the future. It's going to be because I have been finishing a development plan, and in the end, because people couldn't meet, you just do the meetings from home, or I was at work and the others from home. So I think that also what people can do, especially the coaches, you can easily work on your organization. It's like I've done so many paperwork during this time. We finished the development plan. We finished the curriculum. We managed to do that. And we are doing a strategic plan. It's almost finished. So we spent time on quality. I mean, you can get lazy and you just say, I can't do anything. But for the coaches and the clubs, there's so many things you can work on during this period. So I think that was no problem. The problem was just you're so helpless regards to the players. You can, of course, ask them to do some fitness stuff. It's easy because it's static. You don't need the referee. You don't need players around or whatever. All that and stats, and you can work on psychology and doing all these things. But we just we don't have the perfect plan to coach the player. I mean, you could probably say you can do some, you know, computer games, FIFA football games or whatever, but it's very difficult. But you can, at least, you can work a lot on what I've thought about, I think, and push this a bit. I bought a database. Hong Kong FA didn't have a database. So I decided, okay, we're stuck in this now. Let's do it. So 3 months ago, I bought a database from a company in America. And I told everybody, now we have this time. Let's start using this and learn how to use it the best. So all the coaches got together and have been working on that. So I've kept everybody busy in my department, but still, you can't coach the football player directly. That's what you feel. You're so helpless. It's irritating.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move away a little bit from COVID-19. I think it's a huge thing to football worldwide. But let's be more practical, I would say.
Yeah.
If you had to describe a talent in football, what is it in your eyes? And the interesting thing is, for you working right now at Hong Kong and in the past at Iceland, I think you have a totally different approach to seeing and developing a talent. Like in Germany, it's like you have so many players, there will be enough 11 players who play at the national team at the end. In Iceland or in Hong Kong, it's a totally different situation. So for you, what is a talent in football?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. If we start with Germany, because I played Germany a couple of times at the youth level, it doesn't matter. They have so many players, good players, that when they start putting the subs on, if you can compete with Germany, then they put the subs on. All the players who come on are better than my starters. It's just very irritating. But in Iceland, you need to value all the players because the selection is so small. You start with a pool of 20,000 players in the whole country from 4-year-old to 40 years old. It's only 20,000 players. So you need to go for something that we have. And like, let's say Germany, the big teams, the reason why we can play against them is we say, okay, they might be more technical or tactical or whatever, but we have a better mentality. And this is something I think we select in Iceland. We select players more based on mentality than any other nation because we have to do it. And like with a defender, if we take Holland, for example, you see all the defenders in Holland are good football players. So they select players who are good football players at the back. We will select defenders, maybe we'll say, okay, we don't have two center halves who are good in football. Let's try to have one. And the other one is a good tackle or good in the air, is a real defender. But in Holland, you probably have both of them are good in football. Both of them are pretty good defenders. So you need to be careful of not trying to have a team of 11 very technically players. Like last Lagerbäck, the Swedish coach who came to Iceland, he talked about the Barcelona syndrome. We watch so much top football on TV, we think we can always bring this player into our team, but we can't. So in Iceland, you need to acknowledge that most of your players would not get into the bigger teams. There's no way. So you need to focus on mentality, being fit, your DNA, it matters. And the Scandinavian countries on average, when you go to the top level, the senior teams, we are a bit taller. We are a bit heavier. It means, you know, stronger in many cases. Saying that, you have to have intelligent players. If you have 11 players, 11 soldiers in the Icelandic team, you have no chance. So what I found out through my under 15, under 17, that you need to have a midfielder who can turn with the ball and play forward. So if you have midfielders who can get the ball and can't turn, you always play the ball back, you need to punch the ball forward. And you have no chance against the big teams doing that. And this is because the development of football, the technique is so much better, the game is faster. So I think you try to find the balance to bring in those technical skilled players into the youth national teams in Iceland. And you need to have around these players physically strong players. Otherwise, they can't shine. The late developers can't shine without some help. When you come to Hong Kong, the system is totally different because the system relies on, everything relies on education. The dream, or even you're not allowed to have a dream. The parents decide that they've calculated it's not likely you're going to be a professional football player. And if you're going to be a professional football player, you're not going to have a high salary. So while in Iceland, everybody would say, oh, okay, I'm going to be like Gylfi Sigurðsson. If I don't reach there, okay, maybe I'll go for the study. I'm going to study and try to be like Gylfi Sigurðsson or Alfred Finnbogason. But if I can't, then I'll just concentrate on my studies. So by doing this here in Hong Kong, you're taking so much of the population out. So with that 300,000 people in Iceland, 20,000 football players, you still have advantage in Iceland against Hong Kong. You don't have 20,000 football players in Hong Kong who want to be a professional football player. And if you don't aim for it, you're not going to be there. So you would maybe have 500 in Hong Kong, whole of Hong Kong, from 4 to 40 years old who want to be professional football players, instead of everybody in Iceland who want to be there, and in many European countries. So, but still, in Hong Kong, you have also really talented players. But they're not many. They're not many, but you have them. So there's a huge difference in the example in the under-18s of Hong Kong last year. I took them to a tournament. Some really good players, when you start talking about their goals, they don't have their own goals because the parents have decided they go to England for school. Or B, they don't think they can be a big player. They don't have that. In Iceland, just everybody thinks, okay, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be a big player.
How does the story you told me back in Iceland is that you could call the parents of the kids if they don't come to training, and you ask them, why is he not coming anymore? Like, I think there's a totally different situation right now in Hong Kong. So how is the communication and the scouting and development of these talents differentiating between Hong Kong and Iceland?
Yeah, Iceland. Basically, the Icelandic system is very simple. It's a grassroots system. Everybody can play football from the years of 4 years old to, let's say, 14 is the same. You go to a club and you treat everybody the same. You don't do more for the best ones or whatever. So if you would be a coach for a big club in Iceland, let's say in the under 12, there would be 100 players in the group. You would divide them into 10 teams, and you would coach. You'd be a head coach for all of them and bring in assistant coaches to help you. So you would not do anything different from team one to team number 10. In most other countries of the world, and Hong Kong is no exception, there is a selection process very early. It's even in our grassroots system in Hong Kong, there is not all the kids can start playing football. You can go to a football school, but in our FA system in Hong Kong, there are like 3,000 kids who want to come into the under 6 and under 8. We can only take like 50-60% of the players. So totally different philosophy. Selection process in Iceland starts very late. So in the old days, you would play team handball and football. So during the winter, team handball. And of course, we have loads of Icelandic handball players in Germany and coaches. In Germany, it's the small towns that do the handball. But in Iceland, everybody used to do that. But like I would say like 50 years ago, when football went just crazy in Iceland, when really up the top and really strong, if you were good in handball or football, you always choose football. So that's not a problem. In Hong Kong, it's the school who is the biggest problem. There is at certain times when you're 13, 14, and again when you're 17, 18, there is so much workload in school, and there are also school teams that are pretty big, like in America. So especially when you're 17 and 18 years old, you will have once a week a school training with your football team, and it's very sacred to them. So you have a football team, your club, then you have a school training, and then you might have some national team training. So you have more people getting involved, and communications a bit more demanding and more difficult. So it's totally different. So like I said earlier, of the whole pool of the players in Iceland, everybody is aiming for the same thing. But in Hong Kong, the selection process and everything is like the more and more players falling off because of other factors. So you have 7.5 million living in Hong Kong, 300,000 people in Iceland. You have a bigger pool of football players in Iceland for elite. So, and that is, even in Scotland, I did my pro license in Scotland. I started calculating because they have this early selection also. And I calculated that, if you think about it, Scotland and Iceland, you can say now Iceland is a little bit better, but they're like pretty even if you take 10, 15 years. Same again, Scotland don't have much more players to choose from because of the system, because you say, tell the players very early when they're 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, you're not good enough. So when you do that, you already told the player, you're not, we don't want you to take this path. So I even saw now I think it's Bayern Munich. They were saying that they don't want to select too early because of other factors, other sports and so on. So I think that the math in this is so unbelievable, because we're always talking about how we don't have a lot of players in Iceland, but the percentage, how we just milk every drop out of everybody until they are 14, 15, 16. And then we start, you know, selecting more seriously.
Do you think it would be possible to do this kind of model in Germany, for example, as well?
Yes. Yes. I would say that you can do this by saying that you have a lot of national teams, like under 14, 16, 18, if you use, let's say, if you select districts instead of, when you have the selection in Germany, it's a huge country. When you start in the under 14s, in every selection, there are players who drop out. Parents are angry. So you have other options. You decide, okay, I'm going to focus on my study. I'm going to focus on another sport. I'm going to focus on my girlfriend or whatever the factor is. So when you do the big selection, like let's say Germany do that, and the under 14, they select the best 20 players in Germany. There is no need. If you would say, okay, we have 6 counties or 6 districts in Germany, we're going to select 120 players in each district. All these players think they're in the German national team, all of them. You give them the same shirt. So you have 120 players thinking, oh, I'm in the national team. So it's really stupid, even in bigger countries, to do this selection. And of course, what people have found out, when you tell somebody who's 14 or 13, he's in the national team, some of the players slow down. They get comfortable. They think they made it. And this is the same as in the academies all over the world, where you have the selection. Players and parents think, okay, he's made it, and you don't need to push it that much. So I think that it would be smart, because I started to talk about the academies, let's say in the bigger countries like Germany, that you would have a shadow squad. So let's say if people say in, let's say in the Hertha Berlin, the youth academy, you need to have select. So you need to select in the under 8, let's say 12 players, whatever. Then if I was the academy director, I would say, okay, I'm going to select these 12, but I suggest we have a shadow squad of players born after 1st of July, another 12. At least you can sell that. But by selecting 12 players in Berlin, I mean, out of probably 1,000 players you can select from in that city, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's a funny thing that you mentioned Hertha BSC Berlin, because a club that is doing very, very good in Berlin is Alba Berlin, the basketball club, and they're doing this, like shadow teams and a huge fundament on players, and then they grow with them. So totally doing this this kind of concept. We have a few, well, we had a lot of audience questions already. One of them is, how did Iceland surpass the perceived probability of success for such a small population in recent years by so much? I think you already answered it a bit, and maybe you could take it to Hong Kong as well. So what is the plan for, what do you want to do with Hong Kong?
Yeah. Okay, I would if I...
Of course.
Add a little bit to that question. I would say that what Iceland did is the group of players who is now milking the last drops out of that team, they started playing very early in the national team. So we lost like all the games almost for 2 or 3 years. So they got the chance when they were 20, 21, 22. There's a large group of players who went to the Euro finals in the under 21s and did pretty well. So they got the chance to play with the senior team when they were 20, 21, 22. And it was not good for the national team coach at that time because he was sacked and everybody said he was not a good coach. But actually, I think he did a really good job giving the players this opportunity. So that's if we take that further, what I was talking about earlier. In regards to Hong Kong, there's so many outside factors that I cannot control. What I've changed in Hong Kong since I came is I've changed the grassroots and the elite pyramid so we can make use of the players. They had a very early selection. They brought in players in the under 10 and selected them to the national team. Under 10, 11, under 12 were a national team. So all the players there, they were even told they were not in the national team. They were just in the representative team. But of course, the players got the uniform and said, we're in the national team. And the parents said, we're in the national team. So what I found out when I calculated when we were selecting players in the under 18 and 19 in Hong Kong, that many of them had never come to the national team practices before. So it meant that the scouting system and the system itself have failed. So I've been mainly changing that. So I've taken out the under 10, 11, and 12. So we have under 14, 16, and 18. And we're going to train with the under 18, under 23, and the senior team in the FIFA window. And we're trying to synchronize the teams. So that's one thing I want to do. Then I would say that all the changes are mainly to get as many players through the system. For example, here they were focusing on the golden eights, under 10, under 12, and they had more players in the pyramid than the under 10 and under 12, more players than the under 6 and under 8. So it didn't make any sense. So the base was smaller. So when you get to the under 10 and under 12, where we had the biggest population, we needed to take the players from outside. So there were players who had not been in football or whatever. So I've increased the base. So I'm just adapting the machine. So the biggest job for academy manager or a technical director is the machine itself. So the grassroots and the elite pyramid, it's the thing I'm doing. And the next step we're going to do, because the clubs are struggling with the youth development, we are going to go to the clubs. That means we selected 10 clubs, the Premier League clubs. So we're going to have a youth Premier League only with the Premier League clubs. And we're going to have one coach from the Hong Kong FA to support two clubs. So he goes two times a month to all these clubs and follows the under 14, under 16, under 18, gives support to the coaches and the academy manager there. So instead of selecting a few players, and because earlier you know about the education system in Hong Kong, so if you select someone who's 9 years old in the national team, you have no idea where he's going to be in 10 years' time. It's very likely he has decided to focus on his studies. So instead, we're going to make the clubs better because the clubs are struggling. So it's totally different situation here than in Iceland, for example.
What is a club in Hong Kong? What does it look like? If you have to kind of compare to a grassroots club or in Germany, employees, or is it everything is just without any money? Or
yeah, I would say that we have one club who you could say has a really well structured academy. Just you don't need to go in there to fix anything. That's a top club in the league. Then you have a few clubs who have a semi-academy. So they have some structure that's good in place. And then the other clubs in the top league, I would say that's just basically grassroots football in Germany. So the coaches are lowly paid. They're not full-time. And you don't see progression from year to year. So that's the problem. Then outside this in the Premier League, you have commercial soccer schools. And that's commercial soccer schools are very strong in many sense in Asia. So we have some of them like Chelsea Football School. So they've taken the philosophy from Chelsea in many cases and done pretty well. But if you think about results of developing players, the big clubs have failed both in Asia and in Africa. So you probably know about the Dare to Dream football school in Africa, in Ghana, from the connection with Nordsjælland in Denmark. That idea is originally about education. So the first aim is to educate the players so they can go on a scholarship somewhere in the world, preferably to America, and then become football players. So they start with, I want to come here and help you. No other big club has succeeded in Africa because they've always been there for themselves. They want to go in there to sell shirts or for commercial reasons only. And same for Asia. And some Chinese clubs have a cooperation even with German clubs. So they say, okay, let's, for example, say, because we talk about Hertha Berlin, let's say that one club has Hertha Berlin taking care of the youth academy. But by doing that, you know that this is not the best staff at Hertha because they have their best staff in Germany, of course. So there will be a shadow staff, probably less developed, younger coaches and so on. Nothing wrong with it. What I'm saying is that the main reason that the German clubs or English clubs or Spanish clubs want to go to Asia is because of the population. They want to sell shirts. So it's a lot of total lack of respect. While this Dare to Dream project, who's a big success, is because first we want to come in, educate the players. If it goes well, you go to a school or we can sell you to a bigger club or big club like they've done.
So is it your task to bring in the knowledge then to the clubs and to the football schools, or aren't you able to do this?
Yes, definitely. I think the channels are pretty short, you know, especially what has changed since I came is that I've gone to the media and said we need to play younger players in the league, even in the national team. And this is the dilemma. We, the coaches, when you're young, when I was 25 years old, I thought, okay, I'll do this drill. The drill is going to make the player better. But there's also this huge things called opportunities. And of course, in Germany, you've been doing this. You've been playing young players in the league. You go first for local talent before a foreigner, and you develop a lot of young players. So this is what I've been trying to discuss in the media. And for some reason, a lot of locals are starting to say this also, because Asia is based on ranking. That means if a 25 player is equally good as an 18-year-old, they will go for the 25-year-old because of respect for his for his previous jobs or previous games or whatever you call it in the club. As in Europe, because we often think about maximizing the product. So we would say, okay, an 18-year-old player is equal to a 27-year-old player. So if you play the 18-year-old player, giving opportunity, he will, after 1 or 2 or 3 months, be better than the 27-year-old. It just makes sense. It's math. So I think that I've been able to change this attitude. It's changing. In the Chinese Super League, they had this. They made this under 23 rules. So they decided you need to play a certain number of players. But I was very surprised. That didn't work out. For one, they started playing less players than before. And the secondly, in some of the games, they were substituting the players, the young players, in the first half to follow the rules. And even they would put a goalkeeper on as an outfield player just to, you know, fill the rules. So it's, unfortunately, it's still in many countries, not only in Asia, that you play young players because you don't have money. It's not like you want to. Like Norshelland, they have this philosophy. The average age in Europe is the lowest, like 21, 22 years, the average age of the players in the starting lineup. But many countries, same in Iceland, when you struggle, you bring the young players in. They are cheaper. So financially, when you struggle, and also here in Hong Kong, they will get a chance. So it's not organized.
So you have a lot of work to do, like changing the mindset of the people here in Hong Kong. Are there any other principles your work is based on, like besides changing mindset and the thinking about football and youth development?
Well, I think that, of course, I think I have my own principle, of course, but there's also this frame that the Hong Kong FA has. I mean, I cannot just do whatever I want. We have a senior team coach who just selects the team the way he wants. The coaches have some freedom, but we actually started from the beginning when I came in. We brought a 16-year-old to the under-23 team, for example. So some of the things, we're starting to implement it. Maybe I started talking about it and maybe I don't notice that these things are already happening, but they are. So, but in general, there is, you know, you talk to me like a normal TD, but I need to tell you that the average lifespan on a TD in Asia is 12 months. So you're telling me, okay, what are you doing? What are you going to do? I'm in a job like I was coaching in the Bundesliga or the English Premier League. The lifespan is 12 months, and I've been here for 17 months. So I cannot think, I want to in many ways to think long term, but I need to do things as quickly as I can and drive them through, like setting up this youth Premier League, helping the clubs, pushing young players, fast track them through the system. And actually, I have the plan, it's ready. Some of the things I'm starting to implement. And then I will either be sacked or I will leave for another job. It's just a fact in Asia. This is just a fact.
What fits perfectly to your time as a TD is the next question about the audience. How big is the chance that Hong Kong will play a World Cup in 15 years from now? So,
yeah, it's a good question because, it is. I mean, we set up a development plan to be in the World Cup in 2034. So, but I'm guessing that most of the Asian countries have this dream goal because we're going to increase the number of teams in the future. The obstacles here are, because we talked about math, we talked about Iceland and the math, how we used this 20,000 players and tried to put them through the elite system. In Hong Kong, if you don't play young players early on in the Premier League or in the national team, you cannot reach that goal. So it doesn't matter if the coaches are good. If the first game for a young player in Hong Kong is when he's 21 or 22 or 23 in the league, he's not going to make it at the international level. It's not possible. Because the league is slower than most of the best league in Europe. I mean, and the best leagues in Asia. So we have many leagues in Asia who are better than the Hong Kong Premier League. So you can think about it. This would be something like the sixth league in Germany, the standard. So if you were the coach just of a team in the sixth league and you have a guy who is very promising, who's 18 years old, and you would not put him in the team because he's too young, because he's only 18, he's not going to be a player because the sixth league is lower than the fifth and the fourth and the third and so on. So, and this leads to the question that we have had players in Iceland who play in every national team, under 15, 17, 19, 21, but they may be in big clubs, so there are many young players, and they never get the chance to play young in the senior team, in the club level. At the same time, you'll have maybe a boy on the countryside who is not in the under 15, under 17, or under 19, but when he's 18, 19, he starts playing in second division all the games for the senior team. So he will go past that player who comes from a bigger club like this. So this is just math. So in Hong Kong, we can go to the World Cup, but it's based on if we bring the young players early, like 17, 18, 19, into the Premier League. 20 for me is too late because the league is not strong enough.
Okay, we have a few questions from the audience left. I think it took you some time to answer them. So
yep.
Last question from my side is, we talked about the multi-sport approach in Iceland with team handball and in the winter and football in summer. What are your thoughts about it? Because yesterday I heard a podcast with Steve Carr and Pete Carroll from the NFL and NBA, two head coaches, and they talked about it as well. Because in the US, you got this approach as well with playing different sports in different seasons of the year. What do you think about it for developing a football talent and playing other sports as well?
I think it's mixed. I would say 5 years ago, I would say definitely do it. And still, I say you should definitely do as many sports as you can until you're like 12 years old. What has changed with the football part is that it's like the goalkeeper position. You have to be a really good footballer. So let's say it's a very difficult decision. Should you be in goal when you're 8 years old, start being a goalkeeper? Or the best way would be, okay, we decide who's the goalkeeper when you're 8 or 9 or 10, but you also play outside. So I think that physically, because the biggest change in football in the last 5 years for me is fitness. You would have players 10, 15 years ago who were really fast in their brain, but slow on their feet. Dieter Hamann comes to mind, a very good footballer. But I think it's getting more and more difficult to be a top footballer if you're not fast on your feet also. And the numbers show that. So it's no right answer because we have football players who never done other sports. But we also have players who, when we go back in time, we look at their careers and they did other sports. So for the technique and all movements, it will help kids if they do 2 or 3 sports from the age of 5 or 4 until they're 10 to 12 years old. It's the same as when do you start putting players into positions. So it's a tough one. But in general, I would say yes. Definitely, like Bayern are doing, you can say at least when the kids are 10 years old, let them do other sports. But this was tried in Iceland. So there were some clubs who started to, they call it a ball school. So you did basketball, team handball, and football. And you just, it was like mixed when you're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. But in the end, if you were really interested in football, you just went to another club. You moved from that town to do football all week because your interest was football. And it's so difficult today because of the power of football and the Champions League. I said it when the Champions League started playing every week on TV. It just was so big change in Iceland and the interest, the football, and the money was so obvious. And money is one of the drives why kids do football. And it's not doesn't start with the kid, it starts with the parents. So it's a romantic idea to say, let's say you were a great player in Hertha Berlin and you're 6 years old and your parents are trying to pull you to a team handball practice. It's difficult. And even some of the parents would think, we want you to do football because it's more money. So definitely it's good to do all the sports until you're 10, but it's not easy to implement this.
There's a question from the audience that connects to this. How have you found the general level of technical knowledge and technical skill level of a Hong Kong youth player compared to an Icelandic youth player, in your opinion? Well, because I think on the socialization of the kids is totally different.
Yes. I think the understanding of football in Iceland is pretty high. It's like when you go to Germany, Holland, England, Scotland, wherever, if you go and take a taxi, you can talk to the taxi driver about football. You know that. That means that the knowledge of the people in the country is really good. They know football. They might have different opinions, but still they have some knowledge. This knowledge you cannot find in Hong Kong. One of the biggest reasons is the time difference. So we're not many people want to watch football at night. I mean, the Champions League played 3 or 4 a.m. in Hong Kong. English Premier League, 11, 12 o'clock or later, or 3 or 4 p.m. So you don't get that common knowledge of football. Same, this was the problem in America. I played in university and I was a striker and I wanted to get the ball to my feet. And it didn't matter if there's a player behind me, I would keep the ball. It was no problem. As you know, you don't have a lot of space if you're a striker anyway. They would not pass the ball to me. And I didn't understand it. So I asked them, why do you don't pass to me? And they said, you're marked. I said, what do you mean? I'm always marked. You know. So they didn't understand the concept. And this has changed in America because they managed to drive people to watch the English Premier League, the German League, and so on. So in general, you don't have the common knowledge of the Hong Kong coach or the Hong Kong player. However, the best youth players, the players we have in the have brought up to the senior team, the national team, are 17 and 18. And they, when we speak to them, it's the same. So you get a few who have this knowledge of football, and you don't need to explain everything to them. But they're not many. So, and it's, in my opinion, it's like people don't have the team they follow. You don't have this fan base. So like in Iceland, for example, you would go to a birthday party and there will be a 75-year-old woman who supports Newcastle and would start talking about Newcastle in the party. And it's just unbelievable.
Okay. Two more questions from the audience. How would you bring a village amateur club forward? I think he means like a grassroots club. And if what are tips or things they can change right away? You would think that help them to get better structure and better players.
Yeah. Okay. It's a good question. I think I would take the Icelandic model. That's okay. We need everybody. So you would need to go to the schools and see the numbers. How many kids are in every class? How many kids can we get to the football team? Get the parents involved instead of pushing them away. So definitely that will help. Educate the coaches. So it's no excuse that you can have the same good education in a small club and in a big club. And this is the difference from Iceland and other nations. You have to have a license to be able to coach. So there's no excuse for the small clubs. And then you would need to have some goal settings, because in the end, it's just like a school. What's the pathway for the players? If they are too good for us, so to speak, the small club, what's the pathway? When do we release them to another club? Do we release them? Do we have a senior team? What's the connection between the small senior team? Because if you don't have a senior team in the sixth division level youth club, then the players don't see the pathway. They don't see, okay, I want to be like him. It doesn't matter, although you see Robin or someone else on TV, some of these players, you still want to have someone in your hometown that you can look up to. So I think these are the things that I would try to look to.
Mm-hmm. Then the last one is, what skills should a trainer bring? Like football-like, but also tactical and on the psychological human side.
Youth football?
Of course, always youth.
Yeah, okay. The first thing that kids notice is if the coach is funny. It's the emotional attachment. We think we are all tactical geniuses. But the first thing when a kid comes to a football club is the emotional attachment. Is it fun? And it has to be fun. So I would think that's number one. There's this club in Iceland who have almost 2,000 players in the club. And there was this kid, a friend of mine told me the story, another coach. There was this kid who was 5 years old who trained in that club. But the coach, nobody knew who he was. There were so many players. There were like 100 players in the group. They had a lot of coaches, but the head coach doesn't have the connection to the players. So he switches the club in the same town, and they're like 20 in this group. And the kid comes, because they lived in the same building as this coach who told me the story, the kid comes up and says, Guess what? I was in training. And the coach said, yeah, okay, what happened? And he was thought he was going to tell him about he scored a goal. And he said, the coach knows my name. The coach knows my name. So before, it was because there's so many kids, it was just, you, come here, you. And then all of a sudden, this was the connection. So for me, this is the key that is fun. And then, in my opinion, set up tactical exercises for beginning without letting people know it's tactical. It might be like we have a course in football, you attack one goal and defend one goal, but you can do a practice even if they're 6 years old where you need to attack two goals and defend two goals. So the kids become tactical very early without being taught tactics. So you set up the practices before the training and they do problem solving. So their brain will, and tactically they will get much better. This is like the Spanish way a bit. Some people think that you should start teaching tactic when kids are 14 or 15 or 16. It's really ridiculous. I mean, that means you cannot play chess with your grandfather. I mean, we start playing cards, we start playing chess. That's tactics. So you start to learn to think when you play cards, when to wait, when to go for it, and so on. And I think it's a big misunderstanding. But it needs to be fun, and the tactics with kids needs to be fun. It can also be like, let's say if we have two teams, you say, okay, one team starts with three goals, 3-0 up. What happens, you don't need to say anything. The kids who are 3-0 up will try to keep the ball. The other ones will press. You don't need to tell them that. So use tricks like that to get the things you want them to learn instead of always telling everybody. You know, then you need to tell all the 21 players what to do. So I think that that's very important. And just be a teacher. So teacher of football, and not only think, it's a difficult one, not only think about your career. The mistake the young coaches do, we've all been there. We want to win a game so everybody will notice us. And I know that, of course, when you start coaching the under 14, 16, and 18, people tend to look for the results of the coaches. If a coach is winning games in the under 14, they will say, oh, he's a good coach. He's winning all the games. And sometimes it's right, but sometimes it's totally wrong. So I think that it doesn't matter who it is when you're teaching. If it's a player who is a really good player or a player who is not advanced, just try to make everybody better in football. So at some time in their life, even when they're playing with their buddies, when they're 40 years old, they have some skills. That's the job of we have, basically.
Okay. To sum this up or to round this up, the last question is it's one of our favorites. We always ask them on the podcast as well. So you're allowed to announce one rule to all the FAs, clubs, coaches all over the world, no matter the complexity or the cost of the rule you give. What would it be?
One rule.
Like, for example, giving a second goal to every game, for example, or could be anything.
Yeah. Well, the easiest way would be no games and 0-0. I mean, it would be the easiest one. There's a few things. If we look back in time, I remember when they changed it, you couldn't give to the goalkeeper because in general, we're very conservative. You know, you respect football and why are they changing this? So it's one of the best changes ever in football. It was ridiculous. You were winning and then you just passed to the goalkeeper. I would say that no 0-0. It doesn't matter what level. So you would need to go for it. It's an easy question in regards to that. Otherwise, I would say like we started, it's irritated me a lot in the past and still happening. The youth football and senior team football is very different. And going with this under 17 national team, last game of the European qualifiers in the group states, and you have maybe two players in the group who haven't played, and if you change the goalkeeper, if someone gets injured, you've got one fewer player. So you should be able to let everybody play at that level in the tournament or have five changes or whatever. It's so ridiculous to be saying, okay, this is the game, so the under 15s need to follow the rules of the grown-ups. For me, it's so old-fashioned. And even now, because of the coronavirus, they are changing it to five changes. But still in youth football, you have three changes. So I would definitely, at that level, always change that.
All right. So, Tor, it was a pleasure seeing you again, talking to you again.
Me too. A lot of questions. A lot of interest. Questions. Unbelievable.
I hope you find it interesting. And I think our audience could learn a lot from it. So yeah, hopefully we see you guys again. And have a great, I think it's night at Hong Kong already.
Yeah, yeah. It's night. It looks like you're in quarantine.
I am. It's 8 weeks. Cool. Eight weeks.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So, good to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Spieltrieb, Doppelpass.
Das war das Live-Gespräch mit Tor Lacour Arnason. Wie vorher schon angesprochen, ist die Audioqualität nicht ganz so hoch wie bei unseren sonstigen Podcasts. Ich hoffe, ihr konntet trotzdem inhaltlich allem folgen. Mir hat es wahnsinnig viel Spaß gemacht, weil es mir auch wieder gezeigt hat, wie unterschiedlich doch die Ansätze sind, auch wie unterschiedlich die Voraussetzungen sind, die in den einzelnen Ländern gegeben sind. Und wenn ihr mehr erfahren möchtet zu der Arbeit von Tor, könnt ihr ihm auf Twitter folgen. Ich schicke euch den Link in die Biografie bzw. in die Shownotes. Wenn ihr mehr zu unseren Talks erfahren möchtet, die findet ihr alle im ReLive auf unserem YouTube-Kanal unter advanced.footballtalks. Ansonsten bleibt mir noch zu sagen, genießt die Zeit mit ein bisschen weniger Fußball und wir hören uns bei der nächsten Episode Spieltrieb.